With the programs that you were mentioning, if somebody, you know, what is the term, falls off the wagon?
Relapses,
yep. Are able to come back? And do they start from square one?
In these programs, you're absolutely able to come back immediately after a relapse, even in many cases. And I wouldn't say that you start back at a square one. Anything that you've learned in your recovery is something that you can take with you as you move forward.
Yeah. Kevin, there's we were discussing about the hotline. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Dial Helps. It's got the 482 help number.
Right.
And you were also talking about the North Care number. I wanted you, if you could explain that a little bit more.
Right. So at Dial Help, the thing we're most visible for is our crisis services, our text line, and our helpline. What a lot of people maybe don't know is that there is one universal number for the UP to start looking for treatment options. So if you find yourself in an addictive state and you're tired of it and you want to make a change, you can call the North Care Network Central Diagnostic and Referral number. The number is 1-800-305-6564. And what will happen is the CDR's role is to assess for the appropriate level of care that you need and recommend a treatment provider that's part of their network. Dial Help would be one locally, the Phoenix House, Great Lakes Recovery Center, whichever one is going to fit your needs the best. They're also going to assess funding, and you may be eligible for some funding that can help you with treatment if you're low income. But it's always the best place to start. That's the very first number you can call if you're actually looking for treatment. Of course, there are peer support groups that Megan talked about. That's a free option. You don't have to call any number for that. You can just look in the newspaper. But if you're suffering from addiction and you need treatment, the first place maybe you should think about doing is calling the North Care's Central Diagnostic and Referral number.
I've been kind of directing questions at each of you so that we can talk about, you know, the, you know, addressing the substance abuse problem going from childhood through seeking help. And then beyond that, if, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, sort of post-recovery struggles that you're still going to have. But I want to just open this part up now, the time that we have left in this segment. Later on, we'll be talking with Trooper Matt Jerf from the Michigan State Police. And he'll be talking about the state police's approach and how they handle it. But you know, let's kind of consider this sort of an open floor, and so anybody can jump in. Obstacles that keep people from getting treatment, because I've talked with, you know, people who, you know, are quite clearly addicted to the substances, and when I talk to them, their response is, "Oh, boy, I got to get help. I sure do need this," and they're very, they're in full agreement with me, and at the time maybe, you know, they're not strung out at the moment. And they know, okay, yeah, well, this has got to end. My kids are at stake. My family's at stake. I can't get a job. Next time I see them, there's drugs in their life still. And so what's stopping people from getting their help, getting that help, and what can we advise them to do if they're listening?
So that's a very good question. And I think it goes back to just remembering that addiction is a disease, and it does make changes to your brain, and it does recalibrate your reward and stress system. So you've got your own brain kind of working against you. We've all heard the word denial, right? Denial, yeah, can keep us stuck and can give us excuses to keep using as well. I'm assuming that financial obstacles are obstacles for a lot of people to seek treatment. Addiction can interfere with your ability to make a living. But as you mentioned, Rick, you see a lot of these people in court. Okay, well, there's a lot of financial consequences associated with getting in trouble with the law. So that's going to keep digging your hole in your financial situation and might impede you from getting treatment.
One of the things that I see a lot of times, too, is that, you know, in different situations that I've dealt with different people, you know, they still, kind of going back to what one of your comments earlier about it takes a village. You know, one of the things that I think is really important when a person comes to that point of saying, I need help, is do something to reach out to somebody. You know, make that call to you know, what, and one of the things is don't call your friends that are using, because they may want to keep you in that same position. But, you know, somehow being able to reach out to a caring community or a caring individual that can walk you through the steps, you know, to be able to say, okay, well, you know, let's make the call to peer recovery or to some of these other things, and able to take them to that point of, you know, helping them through that process, instead of just, you know, sitting in that same position and you know, that your mind keeps on going and you find yourself, well, I didn't do anything today, and then tomorrow all of a sudden I have another problem and I'm going back to the behaviors that got me into trouble in the first place.
Rick, like a lot of the issues that we deal with at Dial Help, whether it's some shades of mental illness, suicide, depression, victimization, there is a heavy stigma attached to substance use. So feelings of shame and guilt might keep a lot of us from getting help as well.
Is it a myth or is it true that you have to hit rock bottom before you can really get help? Because I've heard that before, but you know, I would like to think that you don't have to get the rock bottom before you can get help.
Well, most people are able to recover on their own, especially if they haven't reached that point of addiction. So I have to be careful there. But there are a lot of different phases to substance use, and most people do try a substance. We mentioned earlier that 68% of high school seniors in the United States have tried alcohol, but 68% of our population are not alcoholics. So that I think it's a myth for a large part.
I think there's significant evidence that shows that you do not have to hit that rock bottom point in order to make meaningful changes in your life.
As part of recovery, what I've also seen, Megan, and that's why I'll kind of direct this one towards you a little bit, you can't come out of, you know, whether it's rehab or from any sort of recovery service and go back to the same friends, the same environment that you had to get out of in the first place. Those friends that were around you, that were supplying you the drugs or that were your drinking buddies, they are not your friends. They don't have your best interests in mind.
Absolutely. And those people can actually act as triggers. They can act as catalysts for substance use, making you remember the things that you were doing with them and really want to use. So a big part of recovery is finding new things that you enjoy doing, finding a new supportive peer group of people that understand recovery, understand what you're going through, aren't going to pressure you to use, and aren't going to expose you to stigma, aren't going to judge you for the fact that you are in recovery.
I've just seen this firsthand, is, you know, that with people who are coming out of recovery, and, you know, it's so hard because you're even, especially if you've gone away and now you've come back because you're some sort of inpatient treatment and you've come back, your friends are happy to see you and they want to come, they want to help you celebrate. You know, and they're going to take you out and show you a good time because now you finally got that out of your way. And that's, you have to avoid that because the temptation to fall right back into, you know, that environment, and you're not going to last very long. You certainly aren't. They're going to have a lot more influence over you than you're going to be able to have over them. You're not going to, you know, it's going to be difficult. I don't want to say it's impossible, difficult for you to come back and then suddenly make all of your friends go clean too.
Right, absolutely. In Smart Recovery, we talk a lot about lifestyle balance. So for a lot of people in recovery, you have to balance the fact that you do have loved ones, friends, but oftentimes family that are still using, with the fact that you're in recovery yourself. So it's finding ways that you can make these new friends and ways that you can connect safely with these old friends, finding ways that you can set boundaries, that you can set limits for yourself to support your own recovery. And of course, in early recovery, one of those boundaries is just limiting that contact initially.
Well, Megan, you just brought up something I never really even kind of considered. You mentioned family. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes there's multiple family members who have a substance abuse problem, whether they're, dad and mom living together, or boyfriend or girlfriend, or brother and sister, or you know, any sort of those things where it's not as easy to break off those relationships, but that you're sharing an addiction. How do you approach that?
Right. Well, again, that really comes down to finding these ways to set boundaries, and the boundaries that you need to keep yourself safe in your recovery. You have to kind of be selfish to put yourself first and know what your own limits are, what you can handle. And it's a balancing act. It's a difficult struggle.
Loneliness can be a trigger. If you find yourself alone, you're going to want to gravitate towards, you know, the substance that you've been addicted to. So what are some suggestions for people that are, you know, they don't want to go back to the same friends, but they don't want to be alone? Where can they reach out for help?
Well, again, the peer support groups are great. AA Smart Recovery, that's a great place where you meet a whole bunch of other people that know what you're going through.
That's important.
Another thing is getting involved in your community, really finding ways to engage with the place that you're living, finding ways to volunteer your time, other things to do with that time that you used to spend using.
Now, we don't have somebody here who is from, you know, like an inpatient treatment service. So, I don't know what it takes to go through a detox. Fortunately, I've never been through it. I know it's not fun. From people that I know that have gone through. I don't know, Megan, if you ever even come close to that, or Kevin, with working with people, and what you can say to those people about, you know, they've tried it before, and it's such a, you know, a difficult time to get through that detoxing period. What you could say to them to encourage them to give it another shot, or what they will go through and how to get through the end. Do you have any?
Detox can be one of the most difficult experiences that somebody goes through in their recovery. Physically, it's very demanding, and mentally it can be even harder. I would suggest, if anybody is thinking they might be experiencing detox, to reach out to a healthcare provider, be that your primary care doctor or even the emergency room. Get that support from healthcare professionals through that detox period.
For those of us who have never had to experience that, we don't understand. But I've, unfortunately, of course, I've seen it now more than once. But it's not in your head. It's a physically you are quite ill, and could it even be fatal? Can detoxing be fatal if you're not getting treatment?
Absolutely. Alcohol detox in particular, for people that are really severe alcoholics, it can be medically dangerous to detox alone, and that's why getting that support from a doctor is so important. Okay. There are things that can make the detox much safer, but you want that medical support and guidance.
People need to keep that in mind when they tell their friends, you know, just stop doing whatever, stop doing the drugs, or, you know, dump all the alcohol out of the house and just lock yourself up and you'll be fine after a few days. No, it can be quite painful, quite miserable, and even, you know, quite dangerous to try to do the, you know, the sort of cold turkey detoxing, depending on how addicted you were.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, I'm learning quite a bit from talking to you folks, and I really do appreciate, because I know everybody has really busy schedules. We've talked about obstacles to getting treatment. What are obstacles in our area to providing treatment?
I would say one obstacle that I notice is that because we are in such a rural community, one issue is people kind of getting to treatment. So to provide treatment, I'm in a discreet location. I'm an outpatient therapist at Dial Help. But if I have clients, say, from Mohawk or from Copper City or from Barriga, I'm not necessarily able to reach them because with a lot of court involvement, there might not be transportation available. And so I see that as one big barrier as a provider, is just being able to make services accessible to everybody in our area.
And mental health issues oftentimes go hand in hand with substance abuse issues. And of course, we've covered on this program before, you know, some of the limitations we have for, you know, mental health services in our area, I would imagine is another obstacle, because it's a different kind of treatment, obviously, but oftentimes somebody who is suffering a mental health issue is also suffering a substance abuse issue and trying to get help and treating the right one properly. If people want more information, and Megan, you've given a couple of phone numbers, and you're welcome to give those numbers out again. I'd appreciate it if you did, because we usually do as we get to a close of a segment. How do they kind of reach out? If you're sitting at home in your living room and you're listening to this program, and you know, so yourself or somebody that you know is in really in need of, you know, getting help before rock bottom hits, before they're ending up in a courtroom being told by a judge they've got to get help, where do they go from here?
Well, one of the easiest things they can do is to call Dial Help and speak to a crisis specialist. They're also information referral specialists. Just give us a call at 482-HELP, and the help is 4357. We are the after hours for the North Care Central Diagnostic and Referral number, so we can give you this number. We can give you all the AA meetings. We can give you referrals to any of the substance abuse providers. We can get you in contact with the communities that care if you want to work on the other end of the issue, if you want to work to prevent problems. So that's kind of a one-place shopping place where you can just give us a call at 482-HELP and get you moving from there.
Okay. Megan, did you want to give those numbers out again?
Yes. The centralized contact number for AA is 906-482-7778, and the centralized contact point for Smart Recovery is 906-337-2310.
John, Megan, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the program, giving me a little extra time to talk about this today.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank
you.
You're welcome.
We'll be talking with Trooper Matt Jerf from the Michigan State Police next. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.